Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
So, I'm Mike M. Compulsive overeater up here in Bakersfield, California. Been in the program about 7 years. Just want to do what it was like, what happened, and what's it like now format for this. You know, what I have is simply a disease of more. I just want more. I read someone once said, you know, when I feel full, there's a switch that goes off in my head that invites me into a feeding frenzy. That's not really not me, because I don't know what full feels like. Even just now beginning to learn what satisfied feels like. So I don't really have feeding frenzies, but I have a dogged determination to just keep eating. More was normal. Bigger was normal. All of it was normal. All of it. You know, the same box of Kraft mac and cheese that fed a family of five when my daughters were all at home quickly became just barely enough to feed a family of two after the daughters had all left. And my wife did not eat anymore. Any place where I could have more was, for me, heaven and the normal place to be. So, a buffet, normal, and I would just eat it. So I had that dogged determination to just eat. And so I would go basically throughout my day, almost always having something going in my mouth. If it's not food, it would be some kind of liquid. You know, tea, soda, rarely water, because water's boring. Just going in my mouth. And really that dogged determination to not, to just keep eating, it was really based on a dogged determination not to feel anything. You know, I grew up in a, you know, as I say, typically screwy home. My father molested me when I was a child. He very much psychologically abused me and emotionally abused me. One of his favorite things to say was, "Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about." And from that, I learned that only nice feelings were allowed. So I always was nice. And nice became the persona that I let people see. But that's all they ever saw of me, was a nice guy. Helpful, better than being the angry guy in terms of socializing, but it was shallow and superficial for the most part. But underneath all the niceness, there was anger filled with resentments that, because I'm nice, no one else could see them. And what I internalized in my head, my thinking, was that I'm a victim. That was the filter through which I judged every interaction in my life. It's all about me, and you are all against me, and you're going to continue the victimizing of me. So I always had my defenses up. Always being careful in relationships. I also became a perfectionist, as there's only one way to do things, and that's to do it right. And there's only one way for me to feel successful and good about myself is to do it perfectly. But we all know that perfectionism makes it impossible to feel successful because there's always some way. So I spent my whole life always wishing that I could do it better, do it good, please people, satisfy them, satisfy my own mind. And I found that it kind of, my mind continually sabotaged any success I had. I had a good career. I actually, people judged my career as successful. But my mind would sabotage that, denigrate it, run it down because it wasn't perfect. And I would always look back with this level of regret, not celebrating the good things I did, but regretting the lack of perfection. And from that, I ended up making everybody else and their successes the measure of what I should be, which means I'm basically making everyone else my higher power. I'm measuring myself against everybody else and what I supposed they were like. Really, that describes my life until I was 64 years old. That's just what my life was. And, you know, married, had a family, been married 47 years, you know, good career. My brain doesn't believe that. My brain believes you really could have done better. So what happened? On my 64th birthday, I had a meeting with the powers that be in the organization I worked for, and they told me they weren't going to renew my contract. So that was their euphemistic way of saying I got fired. Now, they kindly did it 5 or 6 months ahead of time, so I had time to look. But after 42 years, I was somewhat pissed, angry. I was not being nice at that point. And I was just consumed with that, couldn't do anything else, couldn't think about anything else. I was owned by it. And I had heard in my career about 12-step programs. I'd heard about Al-Anon. I said, I need to work on this. So I started going to Al-Anon. Loved it. Great meeting. Learned a lot. Got a sponsor, started working the steps, and sort of knew in the back of my mind how good, this is really good, but it's not quite there. Something's not catching. And one night, my wife and I were eating dinner. The kids had all moved out. And she said to me, you know, Mike, I'm really concerned about how much you're eating. You're eating constantly and eating a lot. And if you knew my wife, you would be floored by that because that is totally out of character for her. She just wouldn't say that to me. And it struck me, okay, there's a problem here. Because eating more is normal to me. It's not unusual. I just eat more, you know. If you see food, you eat it. And the next morning, through kind of the intervention of God, I found an OA meeting and went to it. It was in San Diego. That's where I live. And within 30 minutes, I realized these are my people. I understand these people. They get me. So I began to work that that program, got a sponsor, eventually, probably was in OA for 5 or 6 months before I got a sponsor. I was doing 3 meals a day and one snack, and that was basically my abstinence, still continues. And it was working, and I, you know, working the program, going to meetings, talking to people, lost about 50 pounds, almost 50 pounds. Moved to Bakersfield, ended up searching for sponsors, getting a couple of sponsors that just turns out they had one moved away and another one ended up going out on another program he was in. It just didn't work out. And I spent, I think it was about a year, 14, 15 months without a sponsor. And guess what? Found about 15, 18 of those pounds that I'd lost because found out I can't work the program on my own. Can't do it. I need other people. I need something more than just my own efforts and going to meetings. I needed a sponsor. And because I was only really working kind of the minimalist aspects of the program. I went to meetings, I did my prayer and reflection, but that was it. And what it wasn't enough. So what did I do? I finally went to a meeting one day, a Zoom meeting, and heard a speaker. And I really liked what the speaker had to say and said, he's got what I want. And asked him to be my sponsor. And that was, for me, again, an example of how higher power jumps in and just muddles up my affairs. Because this really has been this relationship, the wisdom of the sponsor has been in the program for 30, 35 years, I think, has been powerful for me because one of the things he asked me to do, and this goes into the what I did portion of my journey, is he asked me to, when I asked him to be a sponsor, he said, sure, love to. I want you to call me every day and every day send me your 10th step. And I all went away because I thought, this guy is crazy. Every day, call him. What am I going to say every day and do a 10 step every day? Though the book does kind of say that. I wasn't doing it. And I thought, oh, I just can't do that. This is going to be so boring. But I said, okay. And I started doing that. And what really restarted, I guess, was a progressive movement in my life into a deeper honesty. You know, it was talking to my sponsor every day, doing the 10th step every day. Was, for me, the recovery of it was honesty. You know, the idea of not telling him something, not fessing up, or not celebrating with him my successes, my growth, my progress, just didn't say, I can't do that. I have to be honest. And what a gift that was. Because as a victim, you know, you don't be honest with people. You say the thing that, you know, is going to keep them liking you and being nice to you. And so you shade whatever truth you need to shade to keep people liking you and being nice to you. So that was counterintuitive for me, is to actually be fully honest with someone. But what a gift. What a gift. You know, the saying, you're only as sick as your secrets, is really true for me anyway. After a while, I asked my sponsor to take me through the steps as if I were a beginner. Now, that sounds very programmed. He's really going to work the program. But my motivation, more than wanting to work the steps, was to just go through them and find out how he did it. So when I sponsor people, I'd have a better plan. So it was really kind of about me. And but he did that. And I have to tell you that working the steps again as if I was a beginner has, over the past months, made an incredible difference in my life. You know, I said I was moving into progressively learning how to be honest with other people. And as I worked the steps, you know, and really look at, you know, like step three, you know, my career was as a professional religious person. And I always took step three as, well, I got that. I understand it, you know? But in reality, I don't think I did. I didn't understand what turning my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood him was about. First off, I didn't get that whole notion of care of God. I was turning my life and my will over to a God who was really quite disappointed in me and was kind of, tapping his foot, shaking his fingers, saying, you really could do better. You could do better. But in doing the
Excuse me, Mike,
steps
you have
again
5 minutes
this
left.
thank you. I found out, no, I'm turning it over to the care of a higher power. And that implies so much about a higher power. And as I've turned again my life and my will over to the care of this higher power, I've found incredible things happening in my life. First off, the whole victim thing, it's still there. I still struggle with it. That filter is still at times in place, but it's less. It's becoming less about me. I'm learning to actually engage people as people and not as people who are going to try and hurt me, victimize me, mess me over. That's a huge change. I'm learning a little bit more that, really, it's not all about me. It's more about you. And that's a different way to approach life, a different perspective. I've learned to, like I said, to live life and other that learn. I'm learning that life and other people, institutions are not my enemy. I don't have to be on guard constantly. And it's kind of funny because as I live that way, I don't pile up nearly as many resentments because people are not victimizing me. There's nothing to resent. They're just other people living their lives, and I'm in relationship with them. That's a huge change. That is, it's changing. It's not done, it's changing. I'm learning to deal, my perfectionism is does not have quite as strong a hold on me as it did. I'm learning to, and I think this is absolutely crucial for me, to distinguish the voice of the disease from the voice of recovery. Because the disease is doing its job, as my sponsor likes to say, and it's just desperately trying to be in control. And because it's desperate, it's very intense, very hard, very much a sledgehammer, and calls me names a lot. Failure, loser, I get called that a lot by my disease. It's never satisfied, and it's intense, intense, intense. What I've learned now that my recovered brain, recovery, my higher power, tends to be very quiet and tends to suggest another way of thinking, another way of doing things, and absolutely loves to applaud any moment when I say, okay, higher power, I'll do that. I'll do your thing and not mine. And so it's the voice of my recovery is quite gentle with me and easy to listen to. I'm learning acceptance. Acceptance, is the it says it's the solution to all our problems, which I thought was bullshit at first. But what I'm finding on the one hand, that as I learn to accept people, institutions, things, myself, my assets and my defects as just facts in my life and no judgment, on the one hand, I find acceptance isn't any magic formula, a one-off thing where, okay, I'm practicing acceptance and now all my problems are gone. That's not my experience. But my experience is Acceptance, learning to live in acceptance, clears the path to which my higher power can work more effectively. You know, and this is over time. As I accept today, I clear a little bit of the path. I accept something else, the path gets cleared a little bit. And really for me, simply that is cooperation with my higher power. Life happens on life's terms. Higher power says, why don't you accept that? I accept it as an act of cooperation. And my higher power says, that's enough for me. I'll be able to work a little more. And he does. So I guess program for me has worked. And if I cooperate with the principles of the program, cooperate with the fellowship, and cooperate with my higher power, I keep recovering. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. So when asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you've asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. And if you have a question, please click the raise hand icon. And Rachel, take it away.
Hi, I wanted to thank you for your share and ask you if you can sort of explain what it feels like and sounds like in your mind when you're not in your perfectionism.
Ah, that's a great question. When I am not in my perfectionism, the main difference is my mind is very quiet and just doing what I'm doing and either enjoying what I'm doing or not enjoying what I'm doing, but I'm just, that's what I'm doing. And so there's a lack of just intensity and condemnation. It's actually very quiet. But I do find that I more naturally just say something to my higher power just while I'm walking the dog or sweeping the floor or something. I'll just, my mind's quiet and the idea of contacting my higher power just pops in. So it's mostly just quiet and relaxed and focused on what I'm doing. All right, Bob.
I'll unmute. Thank you very much, Mike, for your share. Do you have a daily ritual and what is it? Thank you.
I definitely do have a daily ritual. For me, it's sort of tea and apple with God. I wake up in the morning, I get up, get myself organized, fix some tea, slice up an apple, take it into my room, and sit down and start a period of, I guess you'd sort of call it meditation. I'd call it more centering, where one of my issues is I would always beg God to be with me under the assumption that I had to beg for God to even do anything for me. So now I sit and try and affirm first that my higher power is with me and is at work. And I steal this Celtic type of meditation where I just say, God before me, God behind me, God to my left, God to my right, God above me, God below me, God within me. And I just do that as kind of a centering mantra, maybe, I guess. And that really does quiet my mind. because when I wake up in the morning, the first thing, my disease goes after me early in the morning. And so it starts hammering at me early in the morning, and I need to have that centering and that affirming that God is there. Then I generally just ask my higher power to be with me through the day. I talk to them about my wife and family, my sponsees, my sponsor, just praying for them. Then pick up the big book and I read two paragraphs out of it. And I find I need to read less is more for me. And that was at the suggestion of my sponsor, because I always wanted to conquer the big book and get it all read. So less is more. I think about it, just briefly think about what is it saying to me today. Try and avoid applying what I've read immediately to a sponsee, because that's how I really know I'm God's trying to talk to me through that, and I'm not listening when I start thinking about, oh, this really applies to so-and-so. Well, yeah, that's avoidance. So I try and think about what it's saying to me, pick up for today, read the selection from for today, think about it, and then do my 10th step. And I do it in the morning, reflecting back to yesterday. I can't do it at night effectively. It just, my brain doesn't do well at that night. So I do it in the morning and talk about any resentments that have come up, successes in the program, a progress I've seen. And that's do the 10th step and maybe anything from the morning from the reading that struck me. And send that off to him. And that's my routine. Then I go and have cereal and then take the daughter walk. Melissa.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for your share. It was lovely. Can you tell us how your relationship with your loving higher power has changed over the years?
Yes, I can. Being a kind of victim perfectionist, that was my, those were the filters that I had to relate to a higher power. And like I said, I was a professional religious person and worked with people to help them in their spiritual life. And I was pretty good at it. I helped people, and it applied, all the good stuff applied always to them and not me. Because my relationship with my higher power was probably more like trying to please Dad, trying to get the attention of a mom who was kind of distant. I think that's really the filtering I did. And so, you know, I prayed, I read spiritual literature, I did all the stuff, but it was always from the standpoint of, I've got to do it perfectly to get my higher power to really do something for me. And so it was that kind of the constant begging for help and then not being able to receive the help, because at the same time I wanted help, I had to do it myself. I stayed in charge all the time with my higher power. There wasn't a solid, strong path for my higher power to work as compared to now. My higher power did work in me. Did work through me. Can't ever deny that. Don't want to deny that. But now it's so much simpler. The religious aspects that were part of it I've just set them aside. You know, I don't have to deny them. Don't have to throw them out. I said, I'm just going to set them aside and allow my higher power to do whatever my higher power wants. So I generally refer to it as higher power, because even the word God has all sorts of religious connotations that get in the way for me now. And it's so much simpler and so much shorter. My morning time is probably a third the length, maybe 20, a quarter of the length of what it used to be prior to program. But there's so much more depth, simplicity, joy with it. There's no begging. I just ask and then move to the next thing. So it's been simplified, shortened, and deepened, and much more fun than it used to be. Because I'm working with somebody I can cooperate with and who cares for me and really is motivated to work in my life, and I don't have to beg for it. So Frank.
Oh, thank you. Wow, what a share. Where do you think you'd be in your life today without ever having had your disease? And do you see it as a blessing or a curse?
Disease, that there were a lot of curse parts in it. Living with it, living with always having to be nice, always being full, or at least always having had food, never feeling, you know, that curse part of this. And I think if it hadn't been for that, I would still be stuck in that process. I would be still eating, still always having something going into my mouth, still not feeling, still feeling that I don't measure up. You know, I would be still be there. But because of that, it forced me, and my higher power maybe drugged me, I don't know, into the program. And that, my perspective on it is like, well, thank God for that. Because if I hadn't had that, I would not at all have what I have now. Just wouldn't. I would be stuck. And I like living a life that is not stuck anymore. I'm actually progressing. You know, I just like to say on that point, my sponsor is very strong on saying, you know, working on my perfectionism, which is really, it's tough for me. That life is not, you know, based on practice makes perfect, but practice makes better. And that's one of the biggest changes in my life is practice makes better. And better is enough, you know? It doesn't have to be a lot better, just a bit better. And that's enough. Because practice never made anybody perfect. But it does help me be better when I practice the program. So I am grateful for the program. And that has made me grateful for the disease and the whole long 64-year journey of it. Because I'm living life more now over these past almost seven years. More life, better life, more enjoyable life than I had before. And I wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for the disease. Cheryl.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for your wonderful lead. Could you speak some more about falling back into victimhood and forgiveness and the process of your spiritual recovery along those lines?
Yes. Let's see. Well, it's very easy for me to fall back into the victimhood. And the sign of that is the hamster wheel on the event starts going and just goes and goes and goes. And I feel sorrier and sorrier for myself. And more and more resentful against this horrible thing the other person actually didn't do and didn't mean. But in my head, oh, geez. And so I just spiraled down into the resentment. But I guess it's, for me, the big difference is I'm learning to discern the difference between the two voices of my voice of recovery and the voice of the disease. And the voice of recovery of the disease just gets me focused in on myself and how horrible everybody is and everything is. And I'm just totally inward looking in not a good way. You know, not inward looking to discern defects and turn them over to God, but inward looking and just to see how horrible my life is and how horrible that other person is. But as I'm learning to hear the voice of my higher power, the voice of recovery, however you want to term it, it kind of, the question comes up, this isn't working for you, is it? Is it working for you? No, it's not. And as I just try and, okay, higher power, I need powerless over this, I'm powerless over it, I kind of find that the hamster wheel starts to slow a little bit. And now I'm not spending every moment rehashing the whole thing. There's moments of respite in there where I'm living. And usually now, when I do my 10th step in the morning, if there's a resentment in there, if I've been being the victim, that comes up. My higher power reminds me of it, even if I've forgotten about it, between when I went to sleep and when I woke up. It reminds me of it, and I can just write about it and tell my sponsor that, you know, what was happening. And he usually responds with, have you forgiven yourself? Which is very gentle. And it seems to then be lifted. And I can now today live the day without that wheel going on. And I can be looking outward at other people, as opposed to just inward on at me, and have real relationship with people, and not this fake, superficial, pretending I'm not angry relationship. I could actually have a relationship in the moment. And this is a total work in progress.
That's your time.
Total work in progress.